Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Well, I'm really pleased that today on the show I can talk about something that's really close to my heart. How we can feel calm, how we can feel more in control. It's a topic that I talk about a lot in so many different ways. So it's really amazing to be able to speak to an expert that I've been in contact with for a long time, but never got a chance to speak to before. So Gabrielle Trainor is a mindset and positive psychology coach, a writer, teacher, and podcaster. Apparently she lives in a beautiful bit of South Wales as well. Welcome, Gabrielle. How are you?
Hi, I'm well, thank you. It is beautiful, but it's very wet today.
If it's any consolation, it's wet in Hertfordshire as well. So it's not just Wales. So I'd love to talk about some of your tips and takeaways and ideas. But before we do any of that, let's just go back in time and talk a bit about you. Just tell me a little bit about your background and what life was like before you started doing this kind of work.
Yes, it's been an interesting route, shall we say. So although I am now all those things that you just described, a coach, and I'm helping people feel more calm and joy every day, my first career was in publishing. So I was in children's and youth publishing on the editorial side. I worked on pop magazines.
Oh, cool. And,
yep,
which ones? What did you work on?
I worked on one called I Love Pop.
Right. Okay.
Which is about as clear as you can get.
Yeah. Good title.
And kind of various specials to do with what was it before X Factor? Pop Idol.
Oh yeah.
Pop Stars Arrivals. Those kind
of
things.
Yeah.
A lot of sort of preteen magazines and children's newspaper. And then I left that to start my own stationery business.
Well, wow.
Quite different. I really wanted to be creative in a different way, so I wanted to design and. Yeah, I made stationery and that was sold in various shops around the country and what have you. And while I was doing that, I got really interested in positive psychology because I was quite an anxious person, very much a people-pleasing perfectionist, wanted to make sure that I didn't mess up, didn't want to let anybody down ever, wanted to make everybody happy, to make sure everyone was okay. And doing that for a few decades, you start to get quite exhausted by it. And I thought that if I changed my job and if I worked myself, I was no longer commuting from Surrey at that time into London, then that would make everything easy and better. But of course, you're still you just because you work and live somewhere different. And so I started to kind of look around for ways that I could start to help myself. And I found the whole world of positive psychology. And I started to try out the different things that I was learning about on myself, things like gratitude journaling, mindfulness, meditation, self-care, that kind of thing. And so as I was learning about that and finding how beneficial it was, it started to really influence my stationery design. So I started to design reflection journals and gratitude journals. I started the first stationery subscription box called the Happy Paper Club, which was all about sending joy through the post. And then I decided, actually, you know, everything that I'm learning, other people, surely, they could do with this as well. They could benefit from it. And so I started to look at sort of making online courses. And as that began to grow, I then realized I had two businesses. I had a kind of well-being business and I had a stationery business. And it got to the point where I couldn't keep both going. It was just too much. I felt like I was sort of splitting myself in half. So I realized I needed to pick one or the other. And although I love the stationery business, I felt that my future was really with the well-being business. So I sold the stationery business and that is still going with somebody else who's lovely, who's gone off and run with it. And retrained as a coach so that I could, you know, sort of better serve the people I wanted to serve. And yeah, I've been doing that for the last 6, 7, 8 years or so.
Amazing. So before we get into any of the other stuff, I'm really interested, you know, you talk about the being a people pleaser, you know. Let's just talk a bit about that because it's an interesting one. It's a phrase that people have started using more in recent years, isn't it? And certainly with the work that I do, the number of people who have ditched the booze or are trying to ditch the booze, and it's only as they're going through the initial phase that they start to recognize, hold on, I don't even want to drink. I'm only drinking because the person I'm with wants me to drink, or because I've gone to a party and everyone else is drinking and I feel bad for them. You know, so it's a real thing among so many people where, you know, they often don't even identify it until they've noticed something, you know, something in their life where they want to make a behavior change and they're realizing how much it holds them back.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, the idea of wanting to please people, you know, that doesn't sound like a bad thing, but it's when your desire to please people negatively affects you that it's not a great thing. And absolutely, it makes perfect sense of what you're saying. So, if everybody's used to everybody drinking, you know, you're going around to somebody's house for dinner, there's a bit of a dinner party going on, everyone's drinking and you aren't, that can kind of displease people because then they feel like, okay, what is that meaning? So you don't want to drink? Is that something, you know, about what I'm offering you? Is it, you know, it becomes about the other person. And so if you don't want to possibly have that kind of conflict because of them saying, well, why didn't you want to drink? You know, do you think I drink too much? Is that why you're not drinking? Oh, you know, possible arguments. Then it's just easier to just go along with it. And you don't really want to drink, or you really are trying to drink less or even not drink, but you have one because you don't want to have any arguments. You don't want to displease people. And so classic people pleasing behavior, you do things that actually you're not comfortable doing that perhaps drain your energy, that perhaps conflict with your values, but you do them because you want to make other people happy. You don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to cause any upset. You just want to please everyone and make sure everyone's okay and there's no, you know, disgruntlement.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people pleasers, we want a happy life, don't we, really? We try to avoid the conflict. What's the answer then? I mean, give us a couple of tips for people pleasers generally. I mean, I suppose it's about being able to recognize that it's okay to set some boundaries. I used to think that the kind of people that set boundaries and were able to say no were just really mean. I now realize, you know, they're the sensible ones. But what would be your tips for anyone who recognizes they do have that kind of people pleasing tendency, to their own detriment, as you say?
Yeah, I agree. I think boundaries for a long time have kind of had that sort of impression that boundaries are, they're hard, big walls that people put up to keep people out. And actually that doesn't need to be the case at all. I think a lot of the time we go about people pleasing behaviors because we think, we make assumptions, we guess that that is what the other person wants and needs, but we don't actually know it. So we think, you know what, these people can't handle me saying no to them, so I better not say no because they won't, you know, they won't like me anymore. It feels unsafe. They're going to get cross at me. They're going to be bewildered about what to do with it. And actually, an awful lot of the time, the other person is fine with it. Actually, or maybe they're like, oh, a bit surprised. All right, okay, so be it. And they carry on. Actually, it's not necessarily going to be the big disaster that we think. So I think, first of all, it's really helpful to kind of check in with the reality of, okay, what do I think is going to happen? And let's challenge that. Is that actually likely? So, you know, if I say, do you know what, I'm not going to come to the pub after work, is everybody really going to be shocked and horrified? Are they going to leave me out and not talk to me again? You know, are they going to think I'm a really boring, awful person? Really? Or are they just going to go, oh, all right, okay, are you sure? No? All right, fair enough. Okay, well, we're off now. And actually, is that the sum total of the drama? So yeah. I think, you know, we need to kind of have a little reality check of what story are we telling ourselves. And also, you know, think about if it was on sort of the shoes on the other foot, if there was something that you were asking somebody to do and they were doing it not because actually they wanted to, but because they thought they should do to make you happy. They didn't want to let you down. They actually were too tired to do it. They really didn't want to do that thing, but they were doing it anyway. You wouldn't really like that, would you? That wouldn't feel good to you, because then you would know that that person is there out of obligation. They're not there out of choice. Yeah. And actually, that's not a very nice thing to be aware of yourself. And so, yes, you might cover it up, or you think you cover it up really well, that you have gone to the pub when you don't want to, and that other people think that you're happy there. But actually, they can still pick up on those vibes, that your discomfort, your disease of being there. Actually, you don't really enjoy yourself, not really relaxed, you're not really fully there, and they can pick up on that. And then it's like, okay, well, they've come to the pub, but they don't really want to be there, so I don't get why they are. They've seemed a bit off with me, all because you're trying to make everybody happy and doing something you don't want to do. But actually, it's not making everybody happy, because people can, even if they, you know, even if you're acting really well, they can still pick up.
Yeah.
And therefore, there is still that discomfort around everybody. And actually, if you just said, you know what, I'm not going to come this time. You have a great time. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all over, you know.
And I think, you know, that brings us, you know, quickly to to probably what ends up being the nub of the whole conversation, which is, you know, the more comfortable we are in our own skin, the more we have that sense of self-acceptance, self-love, if you want to call it that, the easier these things become, don't they? Because we do start to care a bit more about ourselves, and in so doing, care a bit less about what other people think of us. That's not that it's kind of, well, sod off, sod you. It's just more a sense of when we can feel a bit more confident and authentic in ourselves, that really supports our decision making.
Absolutely. And it's by taking these sort of little steps, and we can make them really little to begin with. We don't have to go straight in with saying no to something that feels really big and scary to say. But when we do it and we realize the world doesn't fall apart, people don't hate our guts, we're not suddenly abandoned by everybody. We then have that evidence and that proof of, oh, you know what? I said no to somebody. I declined something. I didn't go to somewhere, and everybody was okay. The world didn't end. Oh, I've got a little bit of proof for myself now. And therefore, that gives you a little sort of spark of this is possible. This is not actually as scary as I thought it was. And therefore, that feels like it's a little bit more doable. So the next time you do it, it's again another piece of proof. Oh, again, I can do it. And that kind of emboldens you and gives you the idea of it's actually okay for me to do that. And I think that that's just that kind of evidence, that proof that you can build up for yourself is really important.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with NasalGuard for pet lovers. NasalGuard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now, I know that part of the work you do is helping people who are feeling overwhelmed, and you say, you know, overwhelmed by their overdoing and overthinking. So what do you mean by that? I mean, let's start with the overdoing. Are we all stressed because we're doing too much? Or is it that we are setting ourselves massive lists and then we're not quite doing as much as we think we ought to do? What's going on there for many of us?
I think all of that straight away. Yeah. It's the kind of, it's the lack of boundaries, the people pleasing, the lack of being able to say no when you want to. And therefore, you know, you might be adding lots of things to your list that actually you don't want to do. You don't have the time to do. You don't have the energy, the capacity, the finances, the wherewithal to do those things. But because you don't want to turn somebody down, you say yes to it and it gets added to your list. Mm. Or you're doing things that you think you should do because actually that's what impression you have been given by families, by school, by media, by everybody, that actually to be a good person in the world, you need to do these things. You should show up here. You should do these things for these people. You should never say no to someone. Again, back to people pleasing. And so there's lots of things in life that maybe you're doing because you think you should do. Maybe that's what you saw when you were growing up, you know, that's what you saw other people do. Therefore, you think you should do it. So again, you know, the to-do list gets longer. And then there's that feeling of, okay, well, I've got this to-do list and therefore I should get everything done. And should is a big old red flag to me. The minute that the shoulds come in, that to me says kind of obligation. It says, I don't have any choice to do this thing. It's because, you know, I ought to and I should. And so that then just heaps on a pile of pressure. And actually, we can kind of shame ourselves if we don't do the things when we should do them. Then that means that I'm failing in some way. That means that I am, you know, not living up to my own standards, somebody else's standards, the standard I think I'm supposed to be living up to. And it just means that we end up with so much stuff on our plate, which actually may not need to be on our plate at all, because maybe it's somebody else's responsibility. Maybe we've taken responsibility for doing things that actually aren't ours, but because we think that we're being helpful and we should do these things for somebody else, that's the nice thing to do, we end up taking it all on. And then we just have too much stuff to do, not enough time to do it. And that just gets incredibly stressful and very overwhelming.
Yeah. And what role do you think that sort of social media plays in all this? Do you think it has got, in inverted commas, worse in, you know, as more people are on social media, this kind of idea that, oh God, well, everyone else has perfect lives, everyone else is doing an incredible amount of stuff, and I don't seem to be doing as much as everyone else is. Do you think that's made a very real impact?
Yeah, for sure, because we didn't used to be able to see what everybody else was doing unless, you know,
or pretending they were doing.
Or pretending they were doing. Yeah. With, you know, unless we kind of looked through people's windows, you know, or we talked to them on the street and they told us, we didn't know what people get up to.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's not just a case of, you know, oh, well, somebody says that they did X, Y, and Z. Now we have pictorial proof, so-called proof of it. That's what they say they're doing. And we make assumptions that if that's what we see, then that must be what they're doing. And that must be what their life is looking like, even though it's only a little snapshot. And there are so many possibilities. You know, we can scroll in 5 minutes, the amount of pictures that you can look at on Instagram or on Facebook or wherever. And we can see, you know, or this person has this kind of morning routine and that person has that kind of evening routine. And these are all the things that this person fitted into their day, that, you know, we're believing, if we believe everything that we see. These are all the things that I could be doing for a career. These are all the ways I could exercise. These are all the ways I could take care of my mental health and my self-care. All these possibilities, there's all these options in the world, which in one way is lovely that we have all this information, we have all these possibilities and these choices and these options. And at the same time, it's just overwhelming the amount of different things we could be doing and the amount of, you know, things we could be listening to, things we could be reading, places we could be doing, going, places, you know, things we could be doing. There's just so much. It's so overwhelming because there's so much choice and we can kind of feel like we should be doing it all. We're back to that word again. You know, there are all these things that we could be doing in life that, you know, would be fulfilling and we would be interesting. We'd be keeping up with everybody else. And we can't do all the things, but we feel we should be doing all the things. And it's just overwhelming.
It is interesting because, you know, everything you've just been talking about, the kind of the personal pieces, if you like, that, oh, I should be doing this. I should be taking better care of myself. I should also be booking a spa. I should, you know, and on and on. And I absolutely agree. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you've got all the pressures that are put on us by other people that are very real pressures put on us in the workplace, for example. So this has been made really, I've really become aware of it recently because I'm a co-author of a little series of books, Stress to Calm in 7 Minutes. And don't ask me why, but we picked out three professions to start with. So the first one was for lawyers, the second one was for nurses, and the third one was teachers. And in so doing these books, we've done some research with each of these groups and, you know, got some survey material back. And wow, I was quite shocked, actually. We didn't publish any names. We didn't name and shame any organizations. But wow, the stuff we got back when we did these surveys was really, I was really surprised. I was fully expecting to get, you know, nurses saying, I don't find it easy to make time for myself because, you know, I've got a heavy workload, or I've got, you know, I'm working extra hours, or, you know, or I was kind of expecting that, but I don't know if I was expecting the level of intensity that came back on those, you know, 5-minute surveys, like literally people at burnout, literally crying the whole weekend because they just don't know how they're going to face going back to work, you know, absolutely zero time to pee, you know, let alone have a proper lunch break. I mean, one after the other, actually. Similarly, obviously, slightly different scenarios, but with the lawyers, you know, just unbelievable pressure coming at them from you know, management, from caseloads, you know, et cetera. The teaching profession. I mean, it's just given me an insight into a world that I've not really been part of. You know, I haven't worked full time in any capacity for absolutely years, but it's really given me an insight into a changing economy where it would appear, from the little snapshot I've been given, it would appear that there is too much to do by too few people in too little time. I mean, would you agree?
Yeah, I would 100% agree. And I think that it's a really tricky kind of and huge problem to figure out, because that's the thing. We can, you know, we can tell teachers and nurses and lawyers and everybody else all the things that they can do themselves. We can, you know, talk to people about how you honor your own boundaries and, you know, how you try and find time for you to have a snack and have a break and go to the loo when you need it, and, you know, and say no to elements of your workload. But there's only so much that we as individuals can do. And actually, it's the systems and the structures, yeah, of the organizations and the management and, you know, how the whole thing is set up that needs to change as well. Mm. And that is a much bigger, trickier, stickier problem, because then you're asking for a huge culture change in, yeah, enormous organizations like the NHS.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I suppose you've come across people, I certainly have, who have ended up burning out. I remember one woman saying to me that she'd ended up having to take, I don't know, 4 months off work or whatever. And I said to her, do you think, looking back, do you think you saw it coming? And she said, when I look back, I realize that I did see it coming, but it was almost like I was on the roller coaster, just couldn't get off. So that's interesting, isn't it? There's a little bit of us sometimes says, you know, well, I mean, our body does try to tell us, of course. We do get some warnings, don't we? I suppose it's about being able to listen to them early enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's when you're in the thick of it, you're on that roller coaster. I think it's really hard to see it. And I think you probably get to a point where the momentum of the roller coaster is going so fast that you're just not going to catch it until it comes flying off and you crash.
Yeah.
Because before, you know, you just get to a point where you just aren't seeing it anymore. And maybe the people around you see it, but actually you're not going to hear, you know, their warnings, so to speak. And so it's, yeah, one thing that I really would love to impress upon people is the importance of, and it sounds really glib, but the importance of taking care of yourself when you're feeling all right.
Yes,
when actually
exactly.
You're still feeling good before, you know, if I think we often feel, and I think this is sometimes borne out by a lot of books and a lot of, you know, kind of people talking about their story, whereby they talk about getting to that burnout point, getting to the point where they are, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, they are lying on the bathroom floor, you know, in sobs of tears because they can't function anymore. And that's when they then, you know, saw the light, had the epiphany, turned their life around and, you know, wrote a marvelous book or whatever about it. And I think that can be very inspiring, but it can also suggest that
We have to
keep
wait.
Going.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, it's actually the same with
crash.
People drinking. You know, the thinking is, oh, I'll wait till I hit rock bottom. But actually, you know, you want to deal with it before you hit rock bottom. Yeah, totally. So can you share some tips with us then? What can we do while we're, if we're fortunate enough to be relatively well, what can we do to sustain it?
Oh, I mean, there are, so many things. I think maybe, first of all, it's to recognize what is the good stuff in your life already? What are the things that you already know that you enjoy? And let's amplify those.
Yeah.
So if you already know, actually, do you know, I love going for walks in nature, you know, around my local park or, you know, wherever that I can see green trees and flowers. I love doing that. Okay. How can you up that a little bit more? Because, you know, if that's something you really enjoy, that's something you're going to get a lot from. Or if it's, do you know, I just love curling up with my book and my cat. And a cup of tea, and that's just something I really enjoy. How can you increase that? Is that something that maybe, you know, you can't do for an hour a day, but maybe you could do for 10 minutes right at the start of the day? How can you amplify those little moments in your life or the connections with people? You know, I love being with my friends, but we never seem to organize the time. Okay, how can that become a bit more of a priority? And then, you know, what are the things that actually you can recognize that aren't doing you so much of a favor? You know, is it that actually, you know what, I am kind of drinking a bit more than I think is probably making me feel good. I am waking up not feeling great. Okay, what would help you to start addressing that? So it's kind of amplifying the good stuff. Let's see if we can lower the not so supportive stuff. I'd say that maybe that's the first kind of step. And then, you know, then you can look at introducing new things. But rather than trying to do all of it all at the same time, which yet again can become overwhelming, let's start with amplifying the good stuff, lower the not so helpful stuff. And then you can bring in new things.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet, mix with water, and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living. A people and plants dialogue. Hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I remember, you know, back when I was still drinking, when I was very caught up in all kinds of, you know, sort of stress and anxiety constantly, I was aware of the things that made me feel better. But, you know, I know this sounds ridiculous. You'll have come across it before, obviously, but I think I also had this kind of voice of self-sabotage. It's like kind of, well, you know, you know that going and walking by the sea makes you feel better. But you haven't really earned that break. You know, you're not doing enough to justify taking that afternoon off to go and do that. It's almost that thing of, it really was like a kind of self-sabotage. It's actually just being really quite unkind to myself. You know, I remember thinking, thank God I've come through those periods when I think about it. But I remember once thinking, it was my birthday coming up. My birthday's in March. And I was thinking, absolutely love daffodils. You know, I love daffodils. I love walking through fields of daffodils. Somebody should buy me daffodils for my birthday. I remember thinking, one of my kids should know to buy me daffodils and maybe suggest that we go to the park or something so that I can walk through daffodils. I remember having those actual thoughts and yet not caring for myself enough to recognize that I could just go do that for myself. That and that other people are not mind readers, interestingly. It took me a long time to work that one out. You know, I used to get really pissed off that someone hadn't thought to give me what I thought they should know I want. Right. Now, you know, if I want something, I buy it for myself. That's great. You know, but back then I really was in that self-sabotage mode.
Yeah. And I think that it's actually not your fault that you thought like that. And it's not any of our faults we think like that, because this is what we learn.
Yeah.
You know, from the, you know, the get-go, that actually what we need to do first of all is be useful, productive, helpful. Then when we've done those things, when we have, you know, made sure everyone else is okay, when we've done all the things that we're supposed to do, when we've ticked off our to-do list, then we're allowed to do something nice for ourselves, but only when we get to that point. And so that is absolutely what we are taught by everything around us. And so we put it off and we put it off and we put it off and we keep putting it off. And then we get resentful about the fact that I don't get to go walk by the sea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody bought me blooming daffodils when I want them, you know.
Yeah.
But actually, it's reminding ourselves that we don't have to wait for these things. And I think one of the ways that I find most helpful, and I know that can really be a useful sort of switch of thinking, is imagine that it was a friend of yours, somebody that you really care about, really good mate. And they were saying how they really wanted to go walk by the sea, but actually they, you know, they haven't really earned it. They need to do all these things first. What would you say to them?
Exactly.
You'd say,
I'll come easy. With you and I'll even buy you the ticket, wouldn't you, really?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so if you say that to them, then you can apply that to yourself.
I think it's this thing of, you know, these little acts of self-care, you know, that we think of as being selfish. They really are not selfish. They are literally essential, aren't they? It took me so many years to realize that. And, you know, I think that, you know, I've had people rock up to events that I've done, maybe a retreat day or something, and sometimes I'll ask maybe a very small group of women, what is it you'd like for you? What do you want, you know, for you? And initially they'll usually say, oh, I just want my mum to be better, or I want, you know, and they'll start talking about other people in their family or friends, and then I'll say, no, what do you want for you? And, you know, in so many cases they've not thought about that question, possibly for years. Since they're teenagers, perhaps, they literally haven't asked themselves what it is they want, or you know, what they really enjoy. And that's just another layer of this, isn't it? Everything is going outside and we don't do enough. Okay, well, actually, I'm important as well. You know, put your own oxygen mask on first and all the other cliches. But it is quite shocking that an awful lot of people have not considered that question. What is it I want for me?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that idea of self-care being selfish is so prevalent that it can be such a kind of a barrier. If people think that they were to even, you know, start to consider what is it that they want, it just feels like too selfish a thing to do.
Yeah.
Then a way in that I find can be quite useful is to remember that actually you're not the only one who benefits. When you take care of yourself, everyone else benefits, because, you know, think about what you're like when you're tired, when you're fed up, when you haven't actually, you know, had any time for yourself, when you've not done any of the things you enjoy. Actually, you're kind of a bit grumpy. You're a little bit snippy, you know, but if you take care of yourself, if actually you do say, you know what, I'm just going to take myself off for a walk. I'm just going to take myself off to go lie in the bath, and you're just all going to fend for yourself for half an hour or whatever. When you do something for yourself, you then actually are more of the person that you want to be. So not only do you feel better, but actually you're probably going to be a, you know, lovelier mum or daughter or partner or friend or workmate because you've taken care of yourself. So although, you know, it would be wonderful if we could all take care of ourselves, with the main reason being because I'm worthy of taking care of myself, I know that that can be too big a leap to begin with for a lot of people. So if we start with, okay, well, if you take care of yourself, you know what, your kids are going to benefit, your husband's going to benefit, your wife's going to benefit, your mum, your dad, you know, everybody else around you are going to gain because you're going to be a calmer, happier, more patient person. Mm. All right, that's a reason for me to do it. That can
yeah,
be
that puts
the
a
way
spin
in.
On it that you can cope with. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, I get that. So you talk a lot about, you know, when people feel frazzled, because there's no doubt about it. However hard we try, sometimes we do just feel overwhelmed, frazzled, anxious. Give us some tips as to how we can calm ourselves, how we can become calmer when that happens to us.
I think the first important point is to be able to recognize it, because obviously if we don't have that awareness, we can't do anything about it. So if we're charging through life, and we're just getting really irritated with people. And, you know, maybe we feel like, oh, you know, our shoulders really hurt and our stomach's, you know, feeling a bit off. And we don't think, well, okay, what's going on here? Why am I, you know, why am I, you know, being really snappy? Actually, why are my shoulders killing me because they're up around my ears? It's because I'm feeling frazzled. It's because actually this environment is stressing me out. It's because I've not actually stopped to drink even a sip of water all day. Okay. Pause for a second. Let's just stop for a second. Maybe take, and it, again, some of these things sound so cliched, but it's so, the cliched because they're true. You know, take 5 slow breaths in and slow breaths out. And out is as important as in, because, you know, if we kind of gulp in air, that can kind of make us lightheaded because we've got too much oxygen. We need to breathe out the carbon dioxide. Just take a few deep breaths in and out just to slow everything down, just to pause for a second. And then think, okay, what is it that I need in this moment? And it might be that something pops into your head straight away and whatever, and then you might push it aside because it might be like, what I need is to just go and sit down and be quiet for a second. But I can't do that. I've got all these things to do. Okay, if that's what sprang to your mind, that's probably the thing. And we're not saying you now just shut off the world for an hour. If what springs to your mind is I need to sit down and be quiet for a minute, do that. It might mean that you have to go lock yourself in the toilets. Maybe that's the place where you get to have peace and quiet for yourself. But if that's what you need to just bring everything down, just a couple of pegs to just calm your nervous system down, calm, you know, like your heart rate down a bit, just maybe drop the shoulders a smidge. That's what you do. Or maybe it's then you realize, oh my God, I'm absolutely starving. I didn't even have breakfast. It's gone lunchtime. I've not eaten anything today. Right. That's the priority. Find something to eat. Is it, you know what, I haven't moved out of my chair for 4 hours. I realize I have been hunched over this computer. I've not budged. I need to get up and go stretch my legs. And maybe you're not able to leave the building and go out for a walk, but maybe you can just walk up and down the stairs, or you can walk around the office, or you can go into a toilet cubicle and do some stretches. There will be a way somewhere in your environment that you can do a little bit of what you need. And if actually, even if it's right in the thick of things, and you cannot take yourself away, there's one exercise that I find really helpful, which is like a sort of a grounding exercise where you focus on your feet. So you could be in the middle of a meeting and you suddenly realize actually you're feeling very tense and really frazzled. And you literally pay attention to your feet on the floor. So first of all, pick, say, your left foot, and you notice your foot in your shoe. Okay, I can feel all of my shoe wrapped around my foot. And now I'm paying attention to my big toe. I could feel pressing against the floor. And then you literally go through the sole of your left foot, noticing how it is pressing on the floor. And you can, you know, every so often check in with what is happening in the meeting, so, you know, you don't miss what's going on. But by doing that and then swapping to your right foot, it just brings your attention down to the reality of the moment, as opposed to wherever the millions of thoughts that you've got going through your head, because you might be in a meeting, but you're also thinking about what is happening over there and what happened in that conversation and what's going to happen next and la, 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 la. And it just brings your concentration down to one thing in this moment, this reality of your feet pressing onto the floor. And by doing that, it just lets everything calm down in your brain, and that lets everything calm down in your body, because then actually you're, without meaning to, your breathing will slow down a little bit, your heart rate will come down a little bit. might be that your muscles relax a little bit because you're paying attention to one body part. And it can just be a way, even if you're in the thick of things, you're in the supermarket and your toddler's screaming, you're on the bus, you're wherever. That's just one exercise that just helps just bring that stress frazzlement down just a smidge.
Mm, yeah, it's great, isn't it? That whole thing of mindfulness, of just bringing yourself back to the present moment. Yeah, it's so true, because when we get in that kind of panic mode, it's always that we're either thinking about something that's happened in the past, or we're thinking about what might happen, and actually bringing ourselves back to that point of, well, am I safe in this moment? Because obviously if you're not, then you will have to run. But if you are, then it makes so much sense to breathe through it, doesn't it? Just finally, Gabrielle, what's your take on people who feel that they can't cope, they've got too much stuff going on, so they're on antidepressants? Or I have to say, when I first started coaching, I was shocked. I was shocked by the number of women that are on antidepressants. I couldn't believe it. It was a really high percentage of people I was coaching. Obviously, that was affected me even more keenly, because I don't think in any case the women who'd been given antidepressants had been asked about their drinking. So in pretty much every case, they were downing pretty much a bottle of wine every night and then had antidepressants on top of that. But they, in many cases, had not been asked to review that medication. So some of them had been on antidepressants for years. And then in some cases, I might ask them, do you remember when you first went on the antidepressants? What was going on then? And in most cases, they would say, oh, well, that was when I was going through my divorce, or that was when things were hard because of X and Y. So I'm just interested in your view on that, and what is the way forward with all of that?
I think that's a tricky conversation, because you want to kind of be trusting that your GP, the person who has been prescribing the depressants, is, obviously doing these things in your best interest. But like you say, if they haven't actually explored your full kind of life and where you're living, what else could be going on? I know that some women are getting prescribed anti-anxiety medication, antidepressant medication, when actually it's the menopause that they're experiencing.
Yes, exactly. I've heard that too.
Yeah. So I think that it's looking kind of at more places, I guess, than purely one GP route for support with what your symptoms are. So it might be that it's going to your local branch of Mind, or, it's looking at other ways, listening to your podcast, looking around you at what else is being talked about with how you're feeling and what else is going on in your life that could be contributing to how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And it's talking about it. And I think the more that we talk about how we're feeling and kind of various symptoms we're experiencing with other people, the more we learn that actually other people feel that as well. And then they might share how actually they found that by doing X has helped them, or doing Y has helped them, or that they went to this organization, or they read that book, or, it's kind of educating ourselves as well as trusting in, the kind of authority figures that we go to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Being able to be aware of that holistic picture really is so key, isn't it? Rather than just the pill for every ill culture that we find ourselves in. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do then, Gabrielle, and how people can connect with you, how people can find you.
So, yeah, I, like you said, I am a coach and a writer and podcaster. And
just remind us, your podcast is Pressing Pause, yeah?
It is, yeah, yeah. Pressing Pause, yeah. I support women with their overdoing, overthinking, overwhelm. I run some online courses. I coach one-to-one with clients as well. I have recently written my first book called The 1% Wellness Experiment. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Substack. My name is uniquely spelled with this surname, but I can be found with that name pretty much on all social media. And yeah, I just want to help women mainly be, living with more calm and more joy, and in the way that feels in keeping with them and their values and how they want to be going through life.
Great. Well, we'll put all that in the show notes and get those links up. Thank you so much, Gabrielle. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.